Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I'm your host, Eric Fisher. This is the show where I talk to the people behind the productivity. And this week, I'm excited to bring you a conversation I had with my friend, Stephen Worley. Stephen runs the site Life Skills That Matter. And in this conversation, he and I talk a lot about some of the struggles that we have when we work from home or work remotely or work on our own, and how, you know, having accountability, having groups to work in, spaces to go to, how the internet is like a utility these days. And when that goes out, you know, it's like not having heat or not having electricity. And the shifting changes of what careers used to look like and what they look like now and what they're going to look like moving forward. There is a ton of resources in this podcast for remote workers or people who work remotely sometimes, but not all the time. Different things to consider, different things to think about from Stephen and I, who are in the trenches of that work. I know you're going to enjoy this episode, so I will get out of the way and say enjoy this conversation with Stephen Worley. All right, this week, it is my privilege to welcome to the show Stephen Worley. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so excited. This is a thrill. I've been listening to you, following you for a long time now, and it's like awesome. I can't believe I'm on your podcast.
Well, I've been on your podcast, so, you know, it only makes sense.
We had a great conversation over there.
Yes, yeah. And then it makes sense for you to come on my podcast. And what's even more fun for me is the fact that, like, you... I wanted to say you know your stuff, but that's not really it. It's that you're thinking about the things that I'm thinking about, and vice versa, which was illustrated, obviously, by the fact that I was like, oh, crap, this is the show. Let's hit record as we were having our, you know, pre-recording conversation, which was actually getting pretty fascinating. So I almost want to retread that. But before we do that, I want to say, like, what you're doing is, one, you've got a podcast. You've also got a website. It's called Life Skills That Matter. And we're going to talk about work, and we're going to talk about, you know, self-management and all these things. But give me a little bit of a background here on what it is you're doing and your goals over at your site and your podcast.
So a friend of mine once asked me, Stephen, why are you starting this business? You know, and I said, because when I got laid off 17 years ago on election day, it felt super lonely. I also knew that I could no longer work the way that I was taught. So I've been on this journey, and it's finally culminating into this business where I see work fundamentally changing in the next decade. And I'm not being an alarmist. I'm not, this is my vision for work. This is just what's happening. As I like to say, Eric, if I saw that your house was on fire, would you want me to tell you?
Right.
Well, I'm telling you, everybody, your house is on fire.
Yes, it's been burning for a while now, in fact.
Right. So I just think, like, the best way, and everybody's very scared of this, right? There's all kinds of surveys. Americans are very concerned about what's about to happen. But the more we can inform ourselves, we can come up with a plan. You know, that's just how our brains work. Like, we can calm ourselves down. Like, information is power, right? We've heard that 3,000 times in our lives. So the more we can understand what's going on with work, the more we can all help each other prepare for it. And that's what I'm trying to do in this business, is prepare people for the future of work, which I happen to believe is going to be self-management. You're going to, no matter if you're a W-2, a 1099, or whatever form of work we come up with, you're going to have to manage yourself more than ever before. And as I like to say, Eric, if you got to manage yourself, you might as well own yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And self-management, honestly, is, I don't know if you know this, but that was the kind of key or centralized idea for why I started my show way back in... Oh gosh, it's been almost 6 years now that I've been doing this podcast. And I was doing a show with Cliff Ravenscraft. It wasn't called Podcast Answer Man. It was called Social Media Serenity. That's right. Gosh, I can't believe I forgot that. And it was all about doing social media, but not letting it go crazy, take over your life, et cetera. And I would do these. I co-hosted. Well, he simplified his business model and was stripping down and doing fewer shows, not fewer episodes, but fewer overall shows, so he could focus in on the ones he wanted to, which was a great move. I completely understood it, respected the decision, and thought to myself, well, now what am I going to do? Not in a bad way, because I wasn't getting paid or anything from being the co-host on that show, but it was, hey, I suddenly have free time that I can then do my own podcast. What do I want to do? And it took me a while to figure it out, but I kept coming down to wanting to talk to people about how they were doing the work that they were doing. How were they figuring out, you know, balancing work and life and, you know, all the different productivity things. And I was just not seeing the word productivity in my head. I was seeing self-management. I realized that it was it was productivity, but that it was beyond the to-do list. And I literally had that phrase come up in my mind, and I was like, well, there's the title. Boom. So that's,
I think that's what I love about your show, because it's, you know, I think a lot of times people think about productivity as all these hacks, you know, like technology is going to save me, and it all has its place. Don't get me wrong. But I often tell people, like, my goal in work is I don't want to be ruled by a to-do list. I want to figure out everything that I need to do and turn it into a habit.
Yes.
I feel like that is true productivity.
Yes. Yeah. To convert those things into muscle memory, the things that are so important, you don't want to have to keep thinking about them kind of in that, you know, black turtleneck, Steve Jobs kind of a way.
Yeah. I mean, like I'm always telling, like, the chronic mistake, people who work for themselves for the first time, they don't reach out enough. They don't talk to enough people. And I'm not, you know, they obsess over like getting more social media followers. And I'm like, no, you got to have real connections with real people, like conversations. Like, I feel like I'm at a stage now with you of like, I have a legit question. I can call you up. Like, and you're going to respond. I think you would do that for anybody anyway, because that's kind of guy you are.
I try.
But I think that's a great example. I think a lot of times people, when they're building their business, they look at outreach as a to-do list item. And I'm like, no. You got to figure out how to integrate it in a way that makes sense for you and how you like to reach out. And you got to be doing that on a daily basis.
Yeah.
That's business.
Well, and there you go. Because then as work changes, it becomes more of a to-do list item because you're alone, you know, if you're remote working, if you're home or if you're at a coffee shop or a co-working space, you're in this mindset of it's me and I'm in this and I'm in this by myself because I'm the only person I see, you know, day in and day out when it comes to that. So we've got to kind of counteract that with having those digital face to faces, you know?
Yeah, well, it's like getting back to being human, right? I think kind of traditional employment as we know it, its current iteration, kind of screwed up our sense of relationships and building that into our daily lives. Because when you think about it, I think the steady paycheck and all that other stuff about traditional employment. But you know what, Eric? I think people are afraid to work for themselves because they think they're going to have to do it all by themselves, which I tell people, then you're doing it wrong. You know, just self-employment doesn't mean solo employment. It doesn't have to be that way. And humans would evolve to work together and help each other. And I think traditional employment, it's been prefabricated. Like, we buy into that. I think that's what's so attractive. It's kind of like we get a job and the community is kind of built in. Except I like to tell people, I'm like, now everybody I interact with, truly, I love interacting with them. I had a lot of great employment experiences, but there was always people that I didn't quite align with. We didn't have the same work ethic or shared values, or they were just plain old dead weight. And all of that has been ripped out of my work life now. I don't have to put up with that anymore.
Yeah, I totally agree. And again, that is kind of the thing I had to wrestle with. I was in an organization for, let's see here, probably about 15 plus years. And then now for the last 4, I've been a remote worker. And I got to tell you, like, there's never been as big a shell shock or a shift in my thinking that continues to shift, by the way. I still feel like, you know, on a month to month or even sometimes week to week basis, I have to rethink how it is I'm working remotely.
But isn't it so cool? I often tell people, I mean, if you really want to know yourself, you got to like manage yourself or work for yourself. I mean, I cannot think of a better teacher about myself than being forced to own every minute of my day.
Oh, see, and yes, you're exactly right. And here's the thing, like, as I was just telling you, like, that there was that major shift, I realized, well, you know what? I'm not telling the whole story here, because there's another factor, is that for the last 4 years, like, I am actually not working for myself. I do this show, and that's my thing, and that's completely separate, and I have to do that in the margins. Like, there's, you know,
but I feel like it's this spectrum, because I also, it bugs me when, like, sure, you know, the Silicon Valley entrepreneurs are hijacking. They're like, this is the specific definition of what an entrepreneur means. And I think there's a spectrum of that. Yes, technically you're a W-2 employee, but I think of you as an entrepreneur, and there's a wide spectrum of that. And because I think all work is going to look more like self-employment and less like traditional employment.
Sure. And I totally agree with you. I think there's a line there. I think there's, and I think it's a dotted line and a blurry line even, because again, what I was getting at was this, there's maybe this psychological difference of anxiousness that people feel about doing something for themselves, being their own boss, stepping out and being their own thing versus working for somebody else, whether that's remote or not, and kind of the difference between those two things, right?
Yeah, I, you know what I've come to realize, I've deconstructed, because where I'm at is I'm trying to get a larger population of people more comfortable with the idea of working for themselves, whereas there's a lot of people doing what I do and they just focus on the people who are naturally inclined to work on their own, because I was a reluctant entrepreneur. It chose me. I didn't choose it, right? I did it out of pure economic necessity and then I fell in love with it. Mm. But there's four things going on when you're trying to work for yourself for the first time. Number one, there's the self-management piece, because you haven't done that before in the way that you and I have to now. There is the, I have to validate an idea to say like, is this valuable in the market? Am I going to get paid to do this? I have to set up the business, all the infrastructure of the business. And then finally, I have to get customers. And we try to do that all at once. And what I'm trying to now do is like start to separate that out, where I'm focusing now on helping people better manage themselves first while they have their traditional employment job. So they, because you can't, it's very difficult. Some people can do all these four things at once. It is shell shock. But I think if we're going to get more people comfortable with this, we're going to have to start taking this in stages. And I often direct people to say, if you want to work for yourself, so the first thing is you got to learn how to manage yourself. You got to learn about yourself. You have to assess yourself as a resource.
See, and that's what I hope to be. That's what I hope this show to be, is one of many resources like you're doing, like Mike Vardy's doing, mutual friend for both of us, a number of other people out there that I could list off. We're trying to not just have our own business, but we're trying to be a service, to be of service, to be a resource in that way for people so that they can consider all these different things that fall under this umbrella of self-management, because again, it can knock you down pretty hard when you're not able to do that.
And again, it's like the more you understand, because I think a lot of times people are looking, tell me how to be productive, tell me what to do. And I say, well, guess what? You can, those are ideas. What makes me productive or you productive, Eric, could be different, right? And I want to help people understand you got to own just who you are. You have certain tendencies, you have certain abilities, certain habits. And I think a lot of times people want to fight against who they are. And I think the kind of self-management I want to teach people about is to assess who you are, what are your natural rhythms, and work with that, because this, we're moving out of this 20th century capitalist model where there's this one size fits all mentality, that there's this one measure for success, that there's one version of productivity. There's infinite versions, and you should do the one that works for you.
Yeah, because we aren't cogs in a cubicle.
Not anymore.
Well, and so that's what we were talking about pre-recording, and I think maybe we should take...
I think we got a business idea here, Eric. Yes,
so we've got a quick tangent here that we need to walk down, and I'm trying to think of how this... I think it started by you were saying, you know, hey, I hope my Skype works, because you were having issues, and... Yeah. That and right there, again, that's one of the main issues, not just Skype communication in general, but in the internet.
It is. It's almost the other thing. I'm actually going to this event tonight. It was a local government here, is a future of work event, which I'm so excited, because I'm at this place, and maybe you are too, that I look at the world in terms of if we have a majority workforce of solopreneurs or people who are self-employed, we don't have the infrastructure today to make that really happen to be. It's there in bits and pieces. Like I was saying to you, there needs to be a co-working space within walking distance of most Americans' homes, or we need to figure out how to bring people together. We need new tools, new infrastructure, because I even think, you know, politicians kind of think about small businesses and small businesses will create jobs, but I'm saying, well, now there's this new genre of person where I'm trying to get people to create their own work, you know, because a lot of times, like I personally, I don't want to have employees. That's a whole other layer of bureaucracy that I do not want to spend my time dealing with, you know, and I'd rather use technology, or I'd rather have virtual help or collaborate with people.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was thinking of, is it's less of a coworker mentality and more of a collaborative mentality. I would love to, for some of the things that I want to do in the future, be able to work with specifically one of my friends who I wouldn't look at him as being an employee of mine. I would look at him as being a partner of mine who's just doing a different role than what I'm doing. So,
yes.
And it's those kind of networking and partnership, you know, perspectives that we have to start shifting towards. So.
Or we and then you got my brain going, because it's like, you have a podcast set up, I have a podcast set up, and I was saying, like, we're not in our forever place right now where we are in Northern Virginia.
Yes.
But I would love to have like a video set up. And then it kind of got my brain, well, maybe there's other people in the area who would need this but aren't ready to do it or don't want to have it full time. I kind of would like to be able to share that. Like, I can't tell you how many entrepreneurs I've hosted on my couch over the last decade, you know, because that's who I am. Like, I know how hard this is, and any way that I can help out a fellow entrepreneur, somebody starting out, I want to do it. And I think that's another interesting way of how we could be sharing resources.
Yeah. And so us, I mean, ultimately what we were kind of talking about was maybe a bootstrapped kind of co-working space. Cause I had this idea where things shift for me. Like, I've got a great setup. I've got solid internet. Like, I mean, you know, I'm crossing my fingers here as I say this, but like, I don't have downtime when it comes to it. Like, it just works. It's fast. It's for the price that it is, I'm getting a very fast speed, and I'm very thankful for it. However, seasons change, and I forgot that when we moved into this house last year, that we moved in right before the summer, and I still kind of had a co-working space that I was using for at least the summer, and I was using that because the kids were at home, and they were younger then, so they were kind of, you know, my wife would take them somewhere and then she'd go do her work stuff. But they're older now, and it's like taking them somewhere to go get watched and paying for that is kind of like, really? We're doing that still? So, especially when one of them is a teenager. So.
Like, again, that would be another cool idea. Imagine if you have more of that collective of like, you have, I get this all the time. I think there's a lot of people who want to work for themselves, and they have young children, and they might even be the breadwinner, and they feel very held back. But what if you had that collective where maybe one day a week, you're the one who's watching all the kids, you kind of rotate while everybody can work instead of paying for daycare.
Well, and even, and depending upon the age of the kids, you could still get stuff done. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be a large amount of stuff, but like, you could still have a laptop and you could still do admin stuff. That's like, I got to do all these emails, things like that. But like, yeah, I mean, ultimately the idea for me was, I want to get out of the house, but I don't want to just go to a public coffee shop, because that's not conducive to some of the work that we're doing, specifically what we're doing right now, especially when it comes to podcasting, because the quality wouldn't be there. But what I'd love to do is have a bedroom in a house somewhere that I can lock the door, and two or three other of my friends who also want that same scenario, we all go and pitch in and we rent that house, and we stock the fridge, you know, we maybe put in a TV and a Blu-ray player for, you know, quote, break time. But we've all got this ability to go somewhere else other than our house, have our stuff set up, walk in, plop down the computer, plug in, you know, a cord or two, and we're good to go. And it's safe and locked in and it's secure and all those kinds of things. And our coworkers are friends, people we like, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the way. Yeah, I think the co-working culture is still very nascent, because it's so expensive. I that's the frugal New Englander to me. I'm like, I don't want to spend $400 on just having us like a hot desk. You know what I mean? I'm like, that's ridiculous. And I'd rather just continue to pay. It's kind of funny. My local coffee shop, it's like, we have this emerging crew. We're starting to get to know each other. We kind of joke that it's like our co-working space, and we just buy one drink. And so if I buy, like, I'm getting a tea every day for like $3. So if I go every day, that's $15 a week, right? Right. And $15 a week, so that's $60 a month. Yep. And I'm always, so I think that's where, like, we need a greater range. Or, I mean, you have your eye on this. I mean, is there any type of sharing or app? Because there is all these quirky needs of people, because this is an emerging way of working, where we could be sharing all this, you know what I'm saying?
So I know that there's two things that come to mind when you ask that question. Number one is, there's Workfrom, which is a site as well as an iOS and Android app.
I'm familiar I actually interviewed Jewel, but I haven't checked them out lately, because I like that idea of, like, it's like me, like, I'm going to go to a coffee shop and I can level up and actually get to know the people in the coffee shop.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and just the fact that, like, it's – I'm trying to think of, it's almost like Yelp for co-working spaces, really. And, but more than that, it's like Yelp meets, some of the better parts of LinkedIn included, I guess, where you can, you know, it rates the co-working space or that workspace, whether it's like, public Wi-Fi, private Wi-Fi, speed of the Wi-Fi, food, how much public or private space there is, you know, hours of operation, who runs it, like all these different things. And it's crowdsourced reviews of these places and information done by people who are out scouting for work from, whether they're working for it or they're a member. And it's free to be a member. I mean, you just sign up and create an account. And I've added some places actually myself, and I've used it when I've been down in Indianapolis, an hour south of me, because it's like, you know what? I don't want to just go to the corner Starbucks, because there's no consistency to knowing how conducive that space is going to be to working. But work from is huge. So I believe it's workfrom.co. I was looking down to see, am I wearing their t-shirt now? Because I do have one of their t-shirts.
So. Hey, Joel, we just gave you a nice commercial here.
Yeah, so there you go. Like, work from. If you'd love to sponsor, that's great. But, like, I love
this. And we're not getting any kickbacks there. No, and they're great people. And I think they started it with that same vibe of what you and I are talking about today. I feel like there's new emerging needs that are being unaddressed. And this can't just be a highly densely populated urban area thing too. No. I really believe we need to bring this to more parts of the country, and we're going to have to do it in different ways, because you live in a part of the country where it might be so much more feasible to actually rent a house. I am in a part of the country, Northern Virginia, where that is not a possibility. It's just too expensive.
Right. Yeah. See, so cost of living for me, it's part of the perk of being in this small town, 3 hours south of Chicago or an hour north of Indianapolis in Indiana. It's this idea that, like, hey, you know what? Three or four of my friends could feasibly for 100, 125, maybe even, you know, topping out at 150, we could put in and have 3-4 bedrooms or so and a nice living room, and it wouldn't be a rundown place, and we could make this work. I really think we could. So to workfrom.co, that's one option. There, I know there's this other option that I was just thinking of, and even if it doesn't fully exist yet, I know that I was at a conference recently, I think in Nashville, where I heard of this, and here's the idea. It's essentially, it's like an Airbnb for workspaces, where the podcast tech stuff, all, you know, the hardware is all set up. And so you can go in and you can book your time, but it's for free. You go in and you do it for free. The only thing is that the people that own the space require you to give them about like 20 or 30% of whatever it is you make off of the thing you're doing there. So.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And that kind of opened my, doesn't that kind of, you know, broaden your mind in terms of like what's possible. And I thought, that is interesting.
I kind of like that. It's like a kind of a new class of investor, you know?
It's almost like an incubator in a way.
Yeah. I love that. There's another concept. I can't think of the name of it, but it's in New York City. There's a lot of restaurant space that is not used at different times. And they're trying to connect all of that as an alternative co-working space.
I know there's one other idea out there. I haven't ever talked about it on the show, but it's called Breather.
I'm familiar with Breather. They have that in DC here too.
Yeah. So, and I think this is a pretty broad thing. I mean, basically how it works is it's like Airbnb, but for singular working spaces. And, you know, what you're talking about is you're talking about maybe, you know, $100 for an hour for a New York City, like, wide open, like conference room place that's like a flat, you know, in other words, it's like a loft apartment, but done up nicely as almost like office space, but not, you know, cubicle office space. It's done like an open air working kind of an office space. Yeah. So
I just found one. It's called Spacious. Access a curated network of extraordinary workspaces, because that's the other quirky thing about me. Like, I love working. I feel very inspired working in really different places. I got to work in the courtyard of the American Portrait Gallery. If you've never been there, it is super awesome. And I just love, or I loved when I was back in Boston, I loved going to the public library. That this beautiful courtyard, they actually have a Wi-Fi, and there's two plugs if you can get there early enough. So you can work outside in this beautiful space. And I think that to me is also one of the huge benefits of being able to work the way that we do. Like, I don't want to be stuck in a traditional office. Like, that's why I do what I do.
We're going to take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for this episode. This show is brought to you by Grove Collaborative. Grove Collaborative makes it easy to discover natural home and personal care products. It's going to save you time and money because you can schedule and budget your home and personal care products, and their prices are competitive. And they offer free shipping and free returns with no questions asked. Grove makes it easy to switch over to using safe, non-toxic products. Two of the ones that my family is loving is the Mrs. Meyer's Clean Day hand soap with olive oil and aloe vera. I got one in my original pack, and then I went ahead and bought two more because we have 2.5 bathrooms in my house. And I said, I want that in every bathroom because the smell is awesome and the cleaning is even more awesome. And the guilt-free, non-toxic is just an icing on the cake. The other one that we love is the Method Daily Shower Eucalyptus Mint Spray. What this is basically it's a spray it in your shower and then leave it. You don't have to rinse it out. So the two reasons that we love it is one, you spray into your shower and then leave there and it automatically cleans your shower. But not only that, it smells amazing and clean in a fresh way, not a chemical way. Eucalyptus and mint smells amazing. And being able to clean our showers without having to rinse in a non-toxic and safe way means that I can get the kids to do it because, again, it's fun for them. My son, who's 7, says, hey, can I go spray the shower? And I say, of course you can. And it's a fun game for him to just go ahead and spray the shower. And it's cleaning getting done for me. And I don't have to worry about him getting chemicals all over the place. And it smells awesome. Now, I do mine some of the times, but I let them do it also. He's like, hey, can I do yours? And I'm like, sure, fine. So Grove makes it easy to have a happy and healthy home when it comes to your personal care and your cleaning products. And they are offering listeners a special offer, a $30 Mrs. Meyer's kit and a bonus gift and a 2-month VIP membership, which is not a subscription. You're not locked into recurring billing. It's more of a convenience factor. Grove lets you set up a schedule and then checks in with you to make sure that you never run out on your favorite and most needed items. To get this offer, go to grove.co/beyond and make sure to use the promo code beyond. Again, that's grove.co/beyond and use the promo code beyond. Thank you, Grove Collaborative, for supporting this episode of Beyond the To-Do List. This episode is also brought to you by Gusto. Gusto is a refreshingly easy way to do payroll, benefits, and HR for the modern small business. Just because you're in a small business or running a small business doesn't mean your payroll and benefits have to be hard. You don't have to be a big company to get great technology, great benefits, and great service to take care of your team. Most small businesses don't have an HR expert, but you don't need one to use Gusto. With Gusto, you can focus on your business, not just your payroll and your paperwork. 72% of customers spend less than 5 minutes to run their payroll using Gusto. And in fact, 9 out of 10 users say Gusto is easier to use than other payroll solutions. And if you don't believe it, just Google them. People love Gusto. And honestly, how often do you actually love a payroll provider? To help support the show, Gusto is offering our listeners an exclusive limited-time deal. Sign up today and you'll get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. Again, that's 3 months free when you run your first payroll. Just go to gusto.com/beyond. That's gusto.com/beyond. Maybe you have something that's original that you want to create and sell. But to do that, you're going to need a beautiful website, but not just a beautiful website, a powerful website. This is where Weebly comes in. With Weebly, you don't just get easy to build great looking templates. You get tons of tools to help you turn that website into a business. That means you get features to promote your products, process your payments, manage your inventory, send marketing campaigns, and get discovered by new customers. All that, and they have an epic support team with no scripts, no robots, just friendly experts whose job is to help you do what needs to get done. So if you have a creative idea that you want to turn into a successful one, Weebly is the place to start. As a fan of this podcast, go to Weebly.com/beyond, and you'll get 15% off when you sign up for your online store. Again, that's Weebly, Weebly.com/beyond, and go get 15% off when you sign up for your first online store. Weebly, it's more than just a beautiful website.
you know, in my last co-working space, it was a locally owned one in Boston and Dorchester, kind of a developing neighborhood. And it was like, I paid $185 a month. And I was like, I could deal with that. Once it starts getting north of 200 and you're just giving me a desk, I mean, I might as well just go to a coffee shop. Come on. You gotta do something. And it's hard. I think the co-working, where we are with co-working, we're still thinking of it in terms of traditional real estate, because it's, you know, like WeWork just leases most of those buildings, as I understand it. So that's what they're trying to monetize. And I think what you and I are talking about is there's going to be a whole new emerging opportunity to go down market a little bit and be more creative about it.
Yeah, I totally agree. So I'm still kind of kicking around my idea. Again, I don't know. One of the things for me is, again, spacious and breather. They don't have anything anywhere near me. Those are big, big city ones. Like, I look up Indianapolis.
And that's the thing we were talking about. You know? Like, we got to think of concepts, you know, for other parts of the country. It can't be this privileged urban thing. That bugs me.
Yeah.
And we're talking about, like, when you look at this ecosystem working for yourself, we're talking about the space, right? But then there's the meeting of people. There is, like, the stuff. Like, if I'm thinking about experimenting with something, but I don't want to invest in the hardware, you know, how can I, you know, use that? Or I just had to hire a photographer for a workshop that I'm doing because I needed some new photos for my website. If you didn't get this by now, folks, I'm very extroverted. I don't have a problem meeting people. But the people that I work with, for some strange reason, Eric, I attract introverts into my community, which I love.
Well, I would assume it's that they are somehow sensing an amount of leadership from you in that way, I guess. You know, it's like, hey, this guy, and I mean, that really is how it works. Like, although, don't get me wrong, like, I've got introverted friends like crazy, and we all are just like, to get us all to make a decision, it's like pulling teeth. It's like, we don't want to offend each other, but like, that's why the opposite would work, where it's like, if I'm an introvert and you're an extrovert, and I'm like, Steven thinks we should do this, I'm totally cool, let's go with what Steven says, you know. He made the decision. We're all good here.
I did not
here.
Think of it that way.
That's exactly probably how it's working. But anyway.
Because also, I kind of get my introvert on, because it's a spectrum. You know, you're not an either or. Because I also, a big part of what I do is, like, I think there's a lot of people, again, who do what I do. And they're like, I did it this way. You got to do this way. And that's how it's done. And I don't like that, because it's just kind of, it's back to how, where we have this opportunity to really rethink work, not just about getting people to work for themselves. And I want to help people, again, understand how they work. You know, the answer, I know this sounds cheesy, but the answer truly does lie within yourself. We are moving into this era where I can't tell people exactly what they need to do. I can give them a lot of ideas. I can give them strategies. I can give them experiments. I can give them that supportive environment while they're trying to figure this out. That's what I'm trying to provide. It really bugs me when people, you know, I had a lot of success in my last business, you know, and I can share that success, but you can't do it exactly how I did it, because it was different circumstances, different resources, different abilities. And that's what people really need to start understanding. And it just irks me when there's people making so much money out there saying, if you can only just be like me, and then people buy into that.
And that's exactly the reason why kind of having a portfolio like I'm doing here with this show is beneficial, because you can hear all these different people talk about these essential things, but in different ways that work differently for different people. So
you're doing an amazing job.
Well, thank you.
I mean, that's the point. That's what I really like what you do. And I like who you are, because that's what it's all about. That's the future of work, is like, which is so cool. It's that traditional employment didn't encourage us to get to know ourselves or figure out how we like to work. And that, I actually just did a recent experiment. I actually applied for a job. I did a resume cover letter. I haven't done that in 15 years, just to see what people feel like. Like, what are people right now in 2018 going through?
Oh, wow.
And I came away with that experience being like, wow, you're allowed to negotiate your salary, even like your time, but you're not allowed to bring up how you like to work. You are, it's assumed, it's implied that you have to submit completely 100% to the culture of that company. And that's the way it is. I disagree with that. I think that's the next worker revolution. We should be able to understand what makes us uniquely productive, be able to talk about it. And I'm not saying that you're going to be so inflexible that saying I have to like have a black tea at 4:05 every afternoon, otherwise I just can't be productive. I'm not saying get that, but but having a more open conversation, you know, like I'm most productive, like doing my best work from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. And I could never stay into an office past 3 o'clock because I'm pretty tapped out. I could do social things, but in terms of doing real work, I've kind of, it's early morning for me. And the 9-to-5 lifestyle, or where we are currently still with work, is that it doesn't really align with my abilities, my needs, and my values.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different ways, and we've talked about this in different directions on this show before, but this idea of having different times of day that are peak performance for different types of work, and just...
When's your peak performance period?
That's a great question. I think that, for me, it's around this time of day. For me, right now, it's about 10 o'clock, and so unfortunately, you know, between...
In the morning, by the way.
Yeah, when I'm, you know, it's not first thing in the morning. It's not first thing. That's what I've learned, is that over time, especially working from home, I have realized that I am good at warming up during the first time of the morning and kind of passively doing some stuff. That's a great point in time for me to go work out and listen to a podcast, something that's more passive and still get an active thing of you know, getting the workout done. But then getting back, getting cleaned up, you know, having breakfast, but then sitting down and having coffee, and then getting some stuff, major stuff, moved and doing the bulk of the stuff I have to do then. But later in the day, it's like, you know, as the day wanes, it's like, I don't want to do anymore, or I'm not as effective is more what I should be saying. So,
yeah. And it's just like, I was always a very motivated, efficient person. I just know how to get stuff done. Always. That's just part of my personality. And I remember being in offices, like, again, I'd be like all done with my work by 3 o'clock. But it's like, oh, well, you have nothing to do. Let's give you more. And I disagree, right? Because it's this idea that you're only valued by being seen in an office. Like, we're so out of whack. Or, I mean, that's a, you know, if we could redesign work in such a way, companies could really unlock not only just the personal productivity of somebody, but you're incentivizing them to find other more effective ways to get it done. And if they get it done faster, they get to go home earlier. That's part of the reward. They're going to keep doing it. You don't just keep lopping them on like they're on a chain gang. Like, here's some more rocks to go break up.
Yeah, here's more, you know, widgets to crank that you're not going to get paid any more to do. What kind of an incentive is that?
But in you're fact, here I've, for another 3 hours.
Right. I've been,
you're not allowed to leave until 6 o'clock.
I've been in that position. And what I did, unfortunately, was, and I'm ashamed yet not ashamed. I kind of brag yet regret having done it this way. But I would go into my office, and it was about an 8 to 9:30, maybe 10 o'clock a day, where I really got all my work done for the day. And then I had, you know, then a large chunk of time before lunch. And then I'd get back from lunch and I'd do a check in on everything, email, phone, whatever. And then I'd have another large chunk until the end of the day. And at the end of the day, I would do, you know, a quick, like, tidy things up, you know, email, you know, like, just close everything out, close everything down for the next day, hand the baton off to myself for tomorrow. But in those large chunks of time, I mean, I swear, I was in the morning and in the afternoon collectively 5 days a week. Like, in total, I was playing video games on my computer, and I was in a cubicle that was, you had to walk all the way down the hallway to get to mine and then come around. And I could see and hear you coming before you ever got halfway through. So I could easily hit pause and turn it off and whatever. But like, and here's the clinker. I was outperforming everybody else also. So,
but also then I'm also thinking, listening to you, it's like, you didn't get to be your fullest self. You were able to do this activity. You like playing video games. That's fine. But I'm sure there's other things that you might have wanted to do. Like, I love working for myself because I can, like, throw a load of laundry in. Or if I'm like, you know what, I'm feeling stuck, I'm going for a walk, or I'm going to call somebody. I have this other freedom. So I almost feel like I'm living more intentionally every moment of the day in a way that an office environment didn't permit me to do.
No. And ideally, and here's the regret. Like, I brag about it because I got uber productive and had all that extra time. But then I have the regret because I did not make the best use of that time. Although probably part of it was I was working so hard that helped me deal with the stress of it. But I should have been sitting there and reading and writing and, you know, basically consuming and creating, moving my, you know, my mind and my goals forward. And I wasn't.
Can I talk about social media?
Sure.
Because I've also noticed this. I just want to run this by you because you're the guy, man, right?
I'm a guy. I'm not the guy.
You're like one of the social media guys.
Sure.
So I have found, I don't know if you ever noticed, like, I feel like the people who are most active in my social media network beyond just like, this is what they do for a living, are people who work in offices because it's this welcome distraction. They don't want to do the work. They want to like, kind of like burn some time. They want to check out what their friends are doing on. They kind of want to think about what they're doing after work. And I'll be honest with you, Eric, I just don't have that kind of time to spend that level on social media because I'm doing what I want to do every moment of my life.
Mm, yeah.
Any thoughts on that?
No, I agree. I mean, I think that there is a balance there. I mean, again, you have all this, quote, free time, or people would perceive as free time, to be able to do more with social if you wanted to. I am somebody who doesn't post a lot on social either, but that's partly because I'm working in social all the time. Yeah, so I also have this like, oh, I don't want to do too much personally because I'm already doing so much professionally with it and not just for myself. So, but I'm also of the person who's like, I'm not, it's part of my introvert. Is I try to leverage the social in kind of like an Iron Man suit way where it's like, hey, I put it on and I use the technology and then I'm still me when I get out of it. But
yeah.
But I'm also just not a person who's going to post like a picture of boom, goals done, I win, blah blah, hashtag whatever, you know, after I do something every time, because one, I'm just not that creative and I don't care to be braggy about it. But two, like, I just don't think I care when other people do that. So I don't care for me to do it either, you know?
It also, as long as we're getting a little, one little more pet peeve in social media, also bugs me that I see this happening too much now. It really bugs me that people are calling themselves influencers when I feel they haven't really earned the right to do that yet. It just seems really weird. I immediately don't trust that person.
Oh, see, it's again, that for my take on that is it's just like other titles of guru or I'm trying to think of what the other ones are, like expert even, especially.
Or even like calling yourself a leader. And, like yeah, other people get to call you leader. You don't get to call yourself a leader.
I think, yes, exactly. I think there's an inherent similarity between all those different titles, if some of them even are titles, where you should not be claiming that title necessarily. It's that you are bestowed that title by other people. And even then, when you're bestowed it, you don't call yourself that. Other than I think maybe the exception being leader. Because I think if enough people are calling you a leader and literally they are being led by you literally in a team or something, then I think you probably should frame yourself internally as leader so you take it seriously. And even then, that doesn't mean like you're the puppet master. It just means you're the person in charge. You're the steward of those people and you want to do right by them and make sure they succeed. So,
Eric, you are a leader in productivity. You've earned it. And that's the thing that bugs me too, is I have written a blog post because the flip side of this, call yourself whatever the heck you want to call yourself. Seriously. That's the beauty of where we're going. I just want you to back it up. I just think a lot of times people are trying to claim this mantle without putting the work and the effort and the commitment. And it takes a while. You're not going to be a leader in 3 months. It takes years.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, and so even a real leader is honestly somebody who's going to be progressively getting better at self-management, though.
And isn't worried about being called a leader.
Right. They're not worried about what they're being called. They're worried about getting the work done and making sure it's quality work.
All right. I digress. Thank you for permitting me to share a couple of those pet peeves. I feel like you were the right person to share that with.
I think so, too. I think my pet peeves kind of overlap in a way. So, yeah.
Well, sometimes it's just helpful. It's a great conversation to have, because I think there's a lot of that talk about, are you an entrepreneur or not an entrepreneur? And I think a lot of times people are throwing that label onto themselves. It took me actually 5 years to accept that I was working for myself. I didn't even call myself an entrepreneur for the first 5 years of working for myself, because I always thought I'd go back and get a job until I'm like, I'm pretty good at this. I think this is my thing. This is how I work, you know?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes now, you know, it's really unfortunate. The internet is this blessing and a curse that people just, it's like this rampant immediate gratification. And real life, real nature doesn't work that way. Things take time.
Yeah, it's a balancing act. I mean, again, you use it for its benefits and then you step away and, you know, insulate yourself in proper ways from the negative side effects of using that technology. So
a little hack, and I don't like saying hack, but because a lot of times people are going to learn something new for the first time, right? But your brain is kind of like, what are the results? You know, because we just feel that way. I'm going to expend this energy, this time, this effort. Like, I want to know something's going to happen. Like, that's, you know, I'm trying to get people to work for themselves. And that's a big shift of effort and energy and your time, money. So I often now advise people to just do an experiment with a deadline. So that way your brain knows like it's going to end, but at least it gets you to commit to it long enough to push through the learning curve, or hopefully through the learning curve. So you can then reassess, what did I learn? Do I want to keep going here or not? Because I think a lot of times people are just giving up too quickly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Going back and thinking about this from a turning your everyday decisions into habits kind of mode, that's where that comes in, is if this is important enough for me to want to stick with it long term, and it's not one of those things where it's like, no, it's just for a season, then it makes sense to habitualize it.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. I think that's a good gut check for anybody listening to this right now. If you feel like you don't see yourself turning it into a habit that you're going to do day after day, because as much fun as it is to work this way, as you know, it can be a grind. There's a lot of ups and downs, just like with any form of work. If you can't turn it into a habit, I think that's a huge red flag that maybe it's not your thing. And I think that's something to really dig into. And you already have habits. Start really looking into yourself to seeing, like, what do you naturally gravitate toward? What did you do naturally as a kid? What was the essence, the tendency there? And look for ways to start finding ways to do that in work, or working towards solving a problem, or serving a group of people. And that's what I tell people. That's how you find your opportunity, I think.
Yeah. And then obviously there's also the additional help there, where maybe it's not you being habitualized to it, but it's setting up some sort of automation exterior from yourself to help manage yourself.
Absolutely. And if you need that, I'm a weirdo because I have a huge threshold to adopt a new technology in my life. I love technology. I mean, it's helped me run all my businesses. And I think that's a whole other conversation about how the positive side of automation is making individuals wealthier than ever before, if you want to, you know, go down that road. So I actually use Excel spreadsheets for almost every aspect of my business. I know I just got a lot of gasps. People are horrified to hear me say that, but think about it. This is such a flexible piece of software that I can use for ideas and sorting and managing contacts and accounting. I mean, I do have accounting software now. Don't, you know, settle down, folks. But I'm also tired of having to log into another thing. Or like right now, like with payment systems, you know, there's so many different, people are like, can you join this one so I can pay you, and this one and that one?
Or, all right.
This epidemic of collaborative software. I like Slack. That's the one I'm happy to using. But then there's Asana, and there's Basecamp, and there's so many other ones. And then when you're starting to work with it, it's kind of all the stuff that's supposed to make things easier just start becoming more of a distraction for me. So that's where I always go back to, Stephen, you can be productive without technology. All starts with your habits. And that's how I reorient myself.
I like that you're saying that, because again, it isn't about the tools. The tools can be helpful, but it isn't about the tools themselves. It's about you and you basically deciding what it is you need to do, and then making sure that you have the right intervals for whatever it is you need to be doing that on timeline wise, and having a system set up in place for that. And again, that system, when I say system, most people are like, oh, what tool do you use? No, it's not about a tool. Uh-huh. It's about an approach. It's about consistency. And what's it going to take for you to be consistent?
And I'm also, I first do the habit, the free way, right? And then I look for, all right, how can I make this more effective? I see myself doing this habit, or I see this very basic thing that I'm doing over and over again. Is there a tool that can take that over for me now and save me time and energy? That's how I integrate tools into my, I don't integrate tools into my just because everybody else is out there is using it, or they say it's like the coolest thing since sliced bread. I'm doing it because it's based and rooted in my habits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and so all of the stuff that we're talking about, it really comes down to these are the kinds of things you have to start thinking about for yourself personally, self-management wise, when it comes to your work. Well, not just your work, but your whole life. Again, that's why it's kind of called Beyond the To-Do List. Because again, it's about not just the way work itself is shifting and already is shifting and is continuing to shift, and the rate of shifting is going to increase as we go, but like,
oh gosh,
all of
in ways things that we can't even fathom. I mean, yeah. that's where I kind of almost get a little scared, and I don't use that word lightly.
Sure.
Because I think it takes time to do what you and I are doing. This is not something like you just show up and you're going to like have this all figured out in like less than a day. It's an evolution, and it kind of never ends. You know, you're always learning about yourself. I think we both made that point, you know, and I just want to leave people on a note of saying you can manage yourself. It's just that you were never taught to how to learn about yourself and how to manage yourself, because we came out of an economy that kind of didn't want you to. You know, the 20th century industrial economy didn't really want people thinking for themselves. That was designed for you to do a specific task, to follow the directions, to submit to authority, because that's how that economic system worked. That economic system is in sharp decline, and now it's disintegrating into infinite niches. And it's never been a better time to really own yourself, be yourself, because of the internet that you can connect yourself with a community out there who wants your version of whatever it is that you can do. I mean, I interview all kinds. I'm sure you do too. It's like people will come up with the quirkiest ideas. I always tell people, like I interviewed this woman who started a mermaid swimming school, 10 locations in North America. And the crazier the better nowadays, you know, and I think that's what we all have to start owning ourselves. I think we kind of give ourselves this pass, this excuse of like, oh, I could never manage myself. It's almost, I interviewed Liz Ryan of The Human Workplace, and she says the traditional employment system infantilizes adults. And I was like, did you just say that? And I'm like, I'm so excited that she said that. I'm like, you've given me permission, because I kind of wanted to always say that. That's what it feels like. Like, I can't take care of myself. I'm a fully autonomous adult. Come on.
Gosh, that's funny. I really think, again, these are the kinds of things, again, that it doesn't matter if you're already working for yourself, or you're already working from home but working for somebody else, or you're in an office, a traditional office sense. You really need to be thinking about these things anyway, regardless, because most likely the position or the work that you're doing right now will not be the work that you're doing in a year to 5 years. In fact, I almost guarantee you that's true.
And increasingly, it's happening in a lot of industries where companies don't want to hire people that need to be told what to do. They don't. Because things are going to change so fast that they need to hire people who are creative, they're inquisitive, they're innovative, they try to get stuff done. And again, it's not that you have to be the person in charge, but you have to be, at least in your area of expertise, willing to do some experiments and try to figure some stuff out, because things are now just in a perpetual state of invention. It's not like, ooh, we're going to have it figured out and we get to coast for a few years. That's gone.
Stephen, I would love to shoot people over to where you continue to go down this rabbit hole in a good way
Optimistic. I mean, it's an awesome opportunity, people. Yeah. I always like to tell people, like, I never thought I could ever work this way, and if I can do it, you can do it.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is I think most people would be surprised to find out that they can, but they do need to do some more self-assessment first. So let's shoot them over to your site. Again, it's lifeskillsthatmatter.com, and that's where you can find the site, more about Stephen. You can find his podcast, the blog, all the different what are some of the other things that you've got there that are going to help people?
Well, as I would say, the first thing you should do, if you're thinking about working for yourself or you're kind of feeling stuck, you really got to get to know yourself. So I have a free 12-week self-assessment challenge. So like, it helps you develop a self-awareness practice, which is the most important life skill. So I just give you an exercise every Sunday to focus on one area of your life to like really dig into that. So you can go to lifeskillsthatmatter.com/challenge if you're interested in that. And then if you are interested in learning how to start becoming self-employed, I have a ton of free resources. You can go to lifeskillsthatmatter.com/get-started.
Awesome. Stephen, it's been awesome talking with you, for everybody to hear, at least. Usually that's not the case when we talk, but this is a cool exception, and we'll definitely do it again soon.
This was so much fun. I just love talking to you. I mean, I'm leaving this with even more questions and more topics I don't want to talk to you about now. I love that.
Well, let's write those all down, and then we'll do a follow-up.
awesome.
So as this conversation comes to a close, I hope that you got something out of this by sitting on as a fly on the wall at our coffee table, listening in on this conversation between Steven and I, some of it educational, some of it hopefully entertaining. And I hope that you're inspired and moved to take stock of where you are and what it is you're doing and where it is you want to go and what it's going to take to get you there. And head on over to lifeskillsthatmatter.com so that you can check out the stuff that Steven has for you over there. It's really a great body of work, and it's definitely helpful when it comes to approaching this new way of working, this new modality, this new way of thinking about it, this new way of doing it, collaborating, all of the above. So again, head on over to Life Skills That Matter and check that out and let Steven know I sent you. Also, I'd love to hear what you think about this episode by leaving a comment in the show notes, which you can find at beyondthetodolist.com/229. If you know somebody who needs to hear this episode and start to think about the content that was presented in this conversation, hit share while you're there at beyondthetodolist.com/229. Let that person know about this conversation. And also while you're there, check out the sponsors for this episode, Grove Collaborative. Go to grove.co/beyond to get their unique offer, the $30 Mrs. Myers kit, the bonus gift, the 2-month VIP membership. And again, that's grove.co/beyond. Gusto, because payroll and benefits and HR do not have to be hard for the small business. Gusto is offering a limited time deal. Sign up today and go get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. Just go to gusto.com/beyond. And Weebly, don't just create that beautiful website, create that powerful, beautiful website by going to weebly.com/beyond. That's weebly.com/beyond and get 15% off your first purchase. Thanks again to our sponsors for making this episode possible. And thanks to you for listening. I really appreciate it. And I will see you next episode. Beyond the To-Do List is a proud member of the Noodle Mix Network. Find more of our award-winning and award-nominated podcasts to make you think, laugh, and succeed at noodle.mx.